The content of the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. Welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Present your case to our experts by calling in between 12:30 and 1 on Sundays. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now your host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Good afternoon. Today is Sunday, February 1st, 2009. It is Super Bowl Sunday, and we welcome you back to the Live Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, and a very special and warm welcome to the over 100,000 football fans that have come here to Tampa to root for their Arizona Cardinals or Pittsburgh Steelers football team in tonight's big contest. Those of you listening now who have come from Arizona and Pennsylvania will learn for the next hour about diabetes. If you have questions, please feel free to call toll-free 1-877-969-8600, or if it's a local phone call, 289-1860, and ask your questions of today's guest expert, my guest endocrinologist, Dr. Roland LaJoy. On this radio program, we tackle a different medical topic each week with different guest expert, and when you return home, you can continue to listen and ask questions over the web as this program streams live on focusonfemales.com. Again, every Sunday from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time. Podcasts of previous shows are also available on that website. We have created a library of shows dating back to our inception in October. Some of those topics include migraines and headaches, menopause, nutrition and cancer prevention, allergy, bladder incontinence, multiple sclerosis, fibromyalgia, hypertension, dry eye, osteoporosis, sleep disorders, Alzheimer's, uterine fibroids, and what is causing my chest pain. So there's a number of topics. They're all one-hour shows, and you would do well to listen and learn about these various different topics that impact you and your family. This radio healthcare clinic is being brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, whose mission is to create an interactive health safety net with immediate impact to save lives and protect families. We make you a lay medical expert on your medical problems using interactive and dynamic education programs. These programs will enable you to better partner with your existing physician, leading to more effective office visits, faster results, and reduced economic burden of avoidable medical and emergency care. The programs include the radio program, which we've talked about already, as well as the big fourth annual symposium. This is a large healthcare symposium every spring of each year. This year, it is on Saturday, March 21st. We expect 2,000 to 3,000 women at the Tampa Convention Center on Saturday, March 21st. The event is free. And it's a good idea to register now, so you can reserve the topics of interest for you. We're covering 20 different topics this year. It's funny, a few years ago when we started with 12 topics, and with the growing demand and enthusiasm of the ladies that attended, we now have reached 20 different topics. We continue to grow each year. In fact, the exciting thing is there are plans that are now being undertaken, and partnerships and relationships with other companies that are being worked on now, such that by next year we expect 5,000 people to attend, and not far beyond that, I fully expect 10,000 people to know about this event and to participate on it. It's a very exciting development as we all take better control of our own lives through education and prevention, which of course has immediate impact. So this is a wonderful and exciting opportunity to change your life. Now, today's topic is diabetes. Diabetes is a very diverse topic, and we are fortunate enough to have an expert on diabetes with us today. He is endocrinologist Dr. Roland LaJoy. He is currently in solo practice in endocrinology in St. Petersburg, Florida. Dr. LaJoy moved to Florida in 1984 after completing his endocrinology fellowship at George Washington University and his internal medicine residency at Norwalk Hospital. That's the Yale University program. He is board certified in both endocrinology and internal medicine and has 25 years as a clinical associate instructor of medical residents through USF. Dr. LaJoy is a member of the American Association of Clinical Endocrinologists and the American Diabetes Association, having been previously president of its Pinellas, Florida chapter. Roland, it's nice to have you here.
Yes, thank you, and I certainly welcome all our listeners and hope I can clarify any topics or confusions people may or may not have about type 2 diabetes or type 1.
Excellent. Well, let's start at the beginning. What is diabetes mellitus?
In simple terms, diabetes means that there is a high blood sugar. The cause of that can be more complicated, but in simple terms, it is either caused by a partial or relative lack of insulin or an absolute lack of insulin. And often, in addition to that, what we call insulin resistance, the inability of insulin to act properly on peripheral tissues and allow the insulin to enter different tissues, particularly muscle tissue, where it's used for metabolism.
So in some patients, they have the insulin, but the insulin is not being recognized by these other tissues.
Typically, that is the definition of type 2 diabetes. There is insulin around. It's not adequate for the demands of that individual because they have either genetic or acquired insulin resistance.
I see. And again, just so we lay the foundation here, how does that compare with type 1 diabetes?
Type 1 diabetes used to be called juvenile. We no longer call it that because we find significantly older individuals, even up into their 70s, who have that type of diabetes. Type 1 is different in that it's an autoimmune disease that is inherited. We still don't know what the trigger points on the immune system are. It could be viruses, it could be aging, it could be dietary issues. The immune system becomes triggered and produces antibodies that attack and destroy the cells in the pancreas called beta cells that make insulin. So those individuals have little or no insulin at all when they develop diabetes.
And what age group do we think about when we think about type 1 diabetes?
Type 1, there are two peaks. There's a peak somewhere around the 7 to 11-year-old group, pre-puberty. And then there's a much larger peak of new onset at teenage years during puberty. However, we have a smattering of different age groups. Again, we find type 1 diabetes in all age groups, but that certainly is the predominant age to screen for it.
So in other words, if someone develops diabetes and it's a woman in her 40s and it's determined to be an autoimmune diabetes, is she then classified as a type 1 diabetic?
The criterion for that is several fold. One is often on initial diagnosis, we can test for antibodies and find that at least 50% of the time they're positive. The other aspect of trying to make that diagnosis, which we usually do clinically, but if we wanted to do labs, we can do something called a C-peptide, which is released along with insulin. And if that level is very low, then it strongly suggests type 1 diabetes. And the reason to know that early on is that if someone has type 1, we'd institute insulin right away rather than wait to treat them with oral agents.
I see. So just to summarize briefly then, you can get or develop type 1 diabetes as a middle-aged individual.
That's correct.
And if you do so, then you go right to insulin therapy as compared to type 2 diabetes in the middle-aged individual, at which point you consider other approaches before insulin.
Yes. There is a crude other differential in the sense that the majority of type 1s tend to be thin and lean. They have not developed diabetes because of lifestyle issues, whereas the majority, probably 85-90% of individuals develop type 2. Usually have gained significant amount of weight, are heavy or become heavy, and often it is incited by stress such as illnesses, trauma, sometimes high doses of corticosteroids, cortisol preparations can also cause it to appear.
So type 2 diabetes, you say it's frequently found in overweight individuals. Do these people also tend to have elevated serum lipids?
There's a fairly high correlation. When we take a look at dyslipidemia or hypertension, the incidence of abnormalities in those two cardiac risks tend to be double what they are in the general population. There's a specific type of lipid problem that is more prevalent in diabetics, and that's high triglycerides with a low good cholesterol called HDL. So those are risk factors for cardiac disease that need to be addressed concurrently with the treatment of diabetes.
Excellent point. And is it felt that these elevated triglycerides somehow interplay or are related to this insulin resistance where the tissues are not recognizing the insulin, circulating insulin?
It's probably not a direct cause. It more likely is an effect of the fact that insulin cannot cause normal metabolic effects. When glucose is not metabolized properly, the liver produces more triglycerides. And also, insulin is an important hormone in how triglycerides are broken down and used up by the body. So those two mechanisms cause an elevation. Generally, if we have people lose weight, get their glucose levels in better control, the glucose levels and triglycerides will fall at the same time.
Excellent. Okay, we're going to take a very rapid, brief break at this point. We'll come back, talk more about diabetes, glucose, and how to manage it. Be right back.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Call now in Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. More in a few moments.
When it comes to radio advertising, there's a lot of stations out there tooting their own horns. At Talk Radio 860 WGUL, our satisfied clients are the ones dancing to the music.
I'm Nathan Jensen with Paragon Risk Management. Working with WGUL on our advertising has been nothing short of phenomenal. WGUL developed an ad campaign that reached our target audience within a budget we could afford. We found immediate response with the number of callers that we've gotten after the advertising hit the airways. More and more people that we ran into on a daily basis recognized our voices on the air and understood what we actually did. In the process, the business that has been generated from the advertising has been really positive.
Business owner, marketing director, to find out how your company could be the next Talk Radio 860 success story, call Babette Arnold right now, 813-349-8243, 813-349-8243.
This radio healthcare program is being brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 4th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida, 33679-2702.
Are you one of the many folks who suffer from dry eye? Have you seen countless doctors and still can't find relief? Have they told you, sorry, but dry eye is something you'll have to live with or nothing can be done for you? Well, don't stand for that answer anymore just because someone else doesn't understand your dry eye problems. Go to the only eye doctor in Central Florida that specializes exclusively in dry eye and related diseases. Meet with Dr. Stephen Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where you'll be given up to 2 hours of face-to-face time with the doctor to get at the root cause of your dry eye pain and redness. Plus, begin targeted therapy right away. The Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, 3001 Swan Avenue in Tampa. Find them online at drmaskin.com. Haven't you waited long enough?
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back to Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We're tackling diabetes today with our guest expert, Dr. Roland LaJoy. We start talking about diabetes in the first segment, talking about type 1 and type 2 and the different causes of each. Roland, how does someone know if they have diabetes? When should people start thinking if they might have diabetes?
Well, most of the time people don't know if they have it because most individuals with early diabetes do not have any symptoms at all. A normal blood sugar fasting is under 100. Most people will not develop symptoms till at least well above double that value. So it's not uncommon for us to diagnose diabetic patients who've had it for a long time, possibly 5 or even 10 or more years, and who come in with long-term complications because they've never been screened. So the screening suggested is that if you are overweight, especially if it's weight around the central area, the abdominal fat, and you have what's called a body mass index above 20 to 25 is sort of the ideal range. If you're in the 25 and above range and you have high blood pressure, high fat levels, you have a positive family history of diabetes, you should be screened at any age. And that's done particularly with fasting blood sugars.
Are you able to review the BMI? How's that calculated?
Well, the BMI is weight in kilogram over weight in meters, over height in meters squared. So it's a mathematical calculation. Okay. However, we do have easy tables. They're in most physicians' offices, and it's fairly easy to look for those tables. You can certainly find them online pretty much anywhere. The other approach that's used is to take a look at waist. A waist over 35 inches in women and over 40 inches in men is considered a risk for impaired glucose tolerance of diabetes. And so that is a surrogate marker rather than the BMI if you have no access to a table or no one's ever told you what it is.
Well, that's an excellent thing to remember. And perhaps wherever they sell belts in the department stores, they should have a little sign there. If you're reaching for a man over 40 size belt, you should think about possible screening for diabetes. And
This is particularly pertinent since obesity rates in the U.S. have doubled in the last few decades. Diabetic rates in adults have doubled at the same time. In pediatrics, it's even worse. Children's obesity rates have tripled. It's now 15%. Those are BMIs over 30, not 25. And their diabetic rates are skyrocketing. 30 years ago, only 5% of adolescents had type 2 diabetes. It's now 40% of diabetes is type 2 in that population. So this is an epidemic. And it's due to sedentary lifestyle and obesity.
Tell us long-term the risks here so everybody realizes how serious this issue is.
Type 2 diabetes' major risk is cardiovascular disease. Diabetic women have three times the risk of having major cardiovascular events, strokes, heart attacks, heart failure, vascular disease in the legs. That's the biggie, and so that's why we pay a lot of attention to the other risk factors such as blood pressure, smoking, cholesterol, lipid issues. In addition to that, however, type 2 diabetes is now the number one, or diabetes in general, is now the number one cause of chronic kidney failure in America. It accounts for approximately 42%+ of all dialysis patients. If you combine high blood pressure with diabetes, you account for nearly 80% of all chronic kidney failure in America. So that's a big issue. Obviously, the eye diseases with diabetes and poor control is very clear. You can get bleeding in your retina. You can get swelling in the sharp vision area, the macula in the eye, that causes visual loss. And at least in younger patients, it is a, if not number one, the major, one of the major causes of premature blindness.
So this is critically important, risks of blindness, risks of kidney disease, high blood pressure.
And it goes on. Lack of damage to nerves and loss of sensation in the feet, causing injuries to the feet that heal poorly. People have nerve problems in how they empty their stomach, sexual dysfunction. So this is a massive disease as far as the possible physical repercussions it can have in an individual with neglect.
So ultimately, it affects every body part, every tissue, every organ system throughout the body.
Yes.
We have Patty on the line from Lutz. Patty, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Hello.
Hi there. You have a question on diabetes.
I actually have two questions, and bear with me. I may not be able to hang on because I have children in the background playing. My first question was, if there is someone in your family, even if it's a distant relative, that had juvenile diabetes, is there a hereditary factor of getting that diabetes or type 2 diabetes? And the second question is related to, well, go ahead with the first one.
Yes, Patty, good question. Juvenile diabetes has much less of a link as far as distribution from family member to family member. And a distant relative is not considered at risk. A sibling or first or a parent, yes. If you have a parent that has diabetes, one parent, your risk is somewhere in the 2 to 3% range. If you have both parents, it's about 5%. If you have a sibling, it's also a slightly increased risk. But interestingly, there's more to it than just genetics, because when we take a look at twin studies, monozygotic twins, only half of the twins, the other twin, only half the time will get type 1 diabetes. So yes, there is a genetic prevalency, but something else triggers the immune system that is not purely genetic to get the onset. But type 1 diabetes has a much lower family risk of distribution than type 2.
And my second question was, if you've had bouts of hypoglycemia, does it have anything to do with diabetes or getting diabetes down the road?
Well, there is a condition that I think has been overly touted. It's called reactive hypoglycemia. In some individuals, because there is this problem with glucose metabolism, the glucose goes up and the insulin response is delayed and often will occur a little bit later and overshoot the mark. But those low sugars are quite mild. And most of the time when we look for them in people who think they're having hypoglycemia, we find other reasons for the symptoms. The problem with hypoglycemia is there's nothing very specific about it, because the reaction of hypoglycemia is adrenaline release.
And we'll be right back with more. Patty, hold on if you can.
Check out the details. Focus, focus.
the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Call now in Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. More in a few moments.
With SRN News, I'm Michael Harrington in Washington. Warmer temperatures and an army of National Guardsmen coming to the aid of Kentucky residents who've been without power since last week's ice storm. Thousands of troops are removing downed trees, handing out food and water, and guarding evacuated neighborhoods. As the Senate gets ready to consider a stimulus bill, the chief Republican vote counter sees GOP support eroding. John Kyle says the House version contains too much wasteful spending. It might be best to start from scratch. Terrorists in Gaza firing rockets and mortar shells into southern Israel again today. Israeli officials say two soldiers and a civilian have been wounded. Prime Minister Ehud Olmert warns the response will be, quote, harsh, and disproportionate. And hospitals have been overwhelmed with burn victims in Molo, Kenya, after an overturned gasoline tanker exploded. The Red Cross says at least 113 people are killed, more than 200 injured. More details at srnnews.com.
I, Barack Hussein Obama, do solemnly swear.
Now that the euphoria of the inauguration is over, how will President Obama lead?
We are ready to lead once more.
Will he be the post-partisan middle-of-the-road president he talked about during the campaign?
We come to proclaim an end to the petty grievances.
Or will he go to the left the way he did as a senator?
Not whether our government is too big or too small, but whether it works.
Now, more than ever, we're watching Washington from the White House to the Capitol. Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
Saturday afternoon at 3, the Terry Schindler Schiavo Foundation presents America's Lifeline.
What people, I think, have to understand is that it's not part of your everyday vocabulary because we're going about our lives and we're not thinking of this. But the moment something happens to you or someone you love, you're immediately thrown into that situation. And I think people need to be prepared and they need to understand what they could possibly be dealing with.
Only on Talk Radio 860 WGUL, your choice for intelligent talk.
Your host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is ophthalmologist and eye surgeon Dr. Stephen L. Maskin. Dr. Maskin is the medical director of the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, the proud sponsor of today's show. At the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, Dr. Maskin specializes in solving difficult dry eye and cornea disorders with patients traveling from over 35 states and 5 continents for his evaluation. Dr. Maskin manages these dry eye disorders using innovative medical and surgical therapies, including the use of placenta-derived amniotic membrane, a new patent-pending natural eye lubricant to provide relief for dry eye sufferers, an exciting new procedure to unblock obstructed tear glands, and a topical cure for eye surface cancer. Dr. Maskin has been successfully managing difficult dry eye cases for over 18 years and is board certified, fellowship trained, and a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and the American Academy of Ophthalmology. He's been selected a best doctor in America every year from 2000 through 2008 and as an America's top ophthalmologist by Consumers Research Council of America. We hope the Focus on Females education programs, including this show, will help you and your family find the health care that works for you. Focus on Females believes in saving lives and protecting families. And please, visit drmaskin.com. And if you've not found relief for your painful red, dry eyes, come in to see Dr. Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where comfortable eyes lead to restored lives.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back to Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Patty, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Great. Patty asked a question about hypoglycemia. And Roland, you started your discussion.
Yes.
Would you continue?
Most of the time when I look for hypoglycemia in people who are convinced they have it, I can't find it. The symptoms of hypoglycemia are caused by adrenaline discharge, but so are a lot of other things such as stress, anxiety, other illnesses can cause that. That's what causes the malaise, the sweating, the tachycardia. So one of the ways I distinguish if this is it or not is I have people monitor their glucose levels at home with these great finger stick meters we have, and almost never can I find it. When people are having the complaints and they monitor their sugar, they're not finding they're low. So something else is going on in the majority of these individuals.
What do you recommend these folks do?
I think they need to bring this up as a possibility. I have found occasional hypoglycemia. Most of them have been a use of medications, or I've diagnosed a few people who have had insulin-secreting tumors. But one way to alleviate this is to eliminate it as a possibility by, again, testing glucose levels when you're having symptoms. And if that's not it, then you and your physician can be looking for the main cause of why you're having the symptoms you describe.
Patty, how does that sound?
That sounds good. I had another follow-up question.
Okay.
If you're really hungry and you know you need to eat and you just haven't had a chance because you have a family, and you feel that low kind of jittery feeling, is that anything to be concerned about?
Not particularly. That's a natural body's reaction. When our body is not getting calories, it tries to get calories from breaking down glucagon, or glycogen rather, in the liver, and when those stores are used up, your body breaks down fat, and your liver will convert that fat to glucose, which is what your body uses for energy. So when we're deprived of calories, the body makes adrenaline and it makes glucagon that allows our glucose levels to stay stable even if we're not eating for days at a time. Now, those hormone discharges can make people feel a little funny, but it's probably not a low sugar.
Okay.
That's a great question.
It is. Good,
Patty,
good questions, Patty.
Thank you. I think I'm going to go have a sandwich now.
Thank you very much, Patty.
Thank you.
All righty. Good questions. And again, for everyone else listening out there, it's great you're listening, but it's even better to call in with a question. We know you have a question on your mind. Take charge of your life. Call in, ask a question that's pertinent to your experience and what you're going through. Okay, now, let's talk about metabolic syndrome, Roland. This is a term that people are reading more and more in the lay consumer magazines. Would you define metabolic syndrome?
Yes, metabolic syndrome is certainly a risk factor or a risk syndrome for development of diabetes. As a matter of fact, if we look at diabetics, 85% of diabetics who are diagnosed have metabolic syndrome. Now, for someone without diabetes, the things to look for are a fasting sugar over 100, up to 99 is normal, 100 to 125 is considered impaired glucose tolerance. So that's one criterion. There are other criteria, and all you need are three of these to be defined as metabolic syndrome. So a fasting sugar over 100 is one. A blood pressure systolic greater than 130, that's the top number, or greater than 85 diastolic is another possible criterion. The waist size I indicated earlier, waist size greater than 40 in men and greater than 35 in women. A triglyceride level, that's a fat of greater than 150, and an HDL less than 40 in men or less than 50 in women. So if you have three of those, you better be very concerned that you are a potential person who may develop diabetes, because this does indicate the likelihood of insulin resistance. How many individuals have this? Well, if we take a look at the adult population in America, one out of four adults have metabolic syndrome from age 20 and above. If we take a look at individuals over 60, 65, it's one out of two, about 45%. So those are the individuals who should really be screened regularly for the potential development of diabetes.
And as you mentioned before, with the onset of really the epidemic of childhood obesity, these are things that can potentially be identified early on. And you know, lifestyle changes.
Well, this. The problem is our society as a whole probably needs to change, because children learn their lessons from adults, and we've not been good educators as far as healthy lifestyles. this is really crucial, because if we're going to have an impact, it's got to be done very early. Because what we do know, when we take a look at obese children now and take a look at these risk factors we were talking about and look at the amount of thickening of the arteries these children have at age 18 to 20, their artery thickening is just as bad as people who are 45, 50. Wow. Who don't have diabetes. So they have accelerated atherosclerosis, and we're concerned these children are going to have their heart events in their 30s and 40s rather than their 60s and 70s. So now's the time to act. How do we do that when we are poor role models? We're being hypocrites and telling kids to eat well and exercise when none of us as adults are doing it correctly. Now, what we do know about doing proper diets and exercises, if we take a look at studies in early diabetics or people who have prediabetes, this impaired glucose tolerance, and we put these individuals on a regular exercise and nutrition program and make them change their lifestyle, if they lose 7% of their body weight, and they exercise 150 minutes a week, that's 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week, they will reduce the progression to diabetes over a 3 to 5 year period by 50% compared to the individuals who've changed nothing. That's how powerful of a tool that is. But it's hard to change all these temptations and all of these bad habits we've acquired. But if it can be done, that is really the best therapy for this whole metabolic issue.
Well, that's great information to get out. And hopefully through educational programs like what we're doing here on Focus on Females, more and more people will learn about what can be done to improve their health and change their lives, not just of themselves, but their loved ones. Let's talk about the goals of therapy, hemoglobin, A1C, and so on.
Well, for those of you who don't have diabetes, or who have diabetes and have not been told or explained what a hemoglobin A1C is, this is basically a three-month average of your glucose level. How can that be? Well, what this is measuring, it's taking glucose that's connected to hemoglobin in the red blood cell. Now, the higher your blood glucose is, the more of it penetrates into the red blood cell and attaches to hemoglobin in a permanent fashion. Since the average life of a red blood cell is 3 months, when we take these cells and measure the glucose that is inside them, we can get a fairly good reflection of what the average is. Now, a hemoglobin A1C of 6 or less is normal. 6 to 7 is a reasonable level. 7 and above is not so great. The higher you go, the higher the risk of complications. And this is probably the best parameter of judging your risk for complications over time. Now, the ADA would like that number to be less than 7%. The American College of Endocrinology does suggest less than 6.5%. Now, that said, we cannot attain that in everyone. We have to be aggressive in our treatment as possible without causing more harm than we create. So for individuals who have wide swings in their sugars and are very prone to hypoglycemia, or who are very frail and elderly and have multiple other medical problems, we have to be a little more careful, and sometimes we cannot attain these goals. The other thing is, when you look at glucose levels alone, we would like the fasting sugar in diabetics not to be perfect, but let's just say we'd like it to be somewhere in the 80 to 110, 120 range. And we also are beginning to look at two-hour post-meal numbers because we have these great machine meters now that we can study this very well and have patients monitor at home. We'd like those to be under 150 if possible.
When you say post-meal, that 2 hour post?
2 hours. Those are the standards. It gives the meal a good enough time to be absorbed and at least the beginning of metabolizing of that glucose level with the proper medication and diet.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's say a middle-aged woman is diagnosed with diabetes, type 2 diabetes, and they're in your office, initial evaluation, or I should say the first follow-up, and they have diabetes. Let's pull back a little bit. Let's say someone comes to your office and they complain of frequent urinating, frequent meals, and thirsty. frequently thirsty and reaching for something to drink water frequently. How would you approach a patient like that?
Well, certainly frequent urination. When the glucose level gets up typically over 180, 200 milligrams per deciliter, again, normal is less than 100, the kidneys will often not be able to reabsorb all of that glucose, so it leaks out in the urine. And when glucose leaks out in the urine, it pulls water out with it. That's the reason for frequent urination. So people tend to become more easily dehydrated, and they have to drink a lot to keep up those fluid losses. We want to make sure that's due to glucose and not a urinary tract infection or a bladder problem. But if it is due to the diabetes, that is, a symptom that occurs a little bit late. The other problem with that is obviously if you're losing calories, unintentional calories in the urine that way, you can lose 5, 10, or more percent of your calories a day depending on how high your sugars are. So people tend to lose weight. So unexplained weight loss, fatigue, listlessness, blurry vision, frequent urination and thirst are symptoms of high glucose levels. So then we would monitor those glucose levels and decide if we were going to take a conservative versus more aggressive approach. If the glucose levels aren't too high, we may want to try an aggressive diet and lifestyle modification for a while. But if the levels are quite high at entry, we would probably put that person on medication along with lifestyle modification.
Let's say the blood glucose levels are between 175 and 225.
What I probably would do at that point is suggest diabetic education classes, a nutrition visit, and probably start my first oral agent in that person, which would likely be metformin.
Okay. And let's say the person was also obese.
That would be the more important approach. To metformin does have a mild appetite suppressant effect. We'd want to get the glucose levels lower. If that individual took lifestyle modification to heart and was successful, it would be possible that later on one could even stop the medication.
Okay. And then if they're a smoker, then you would emphatically urge them to stop smoking?
Smoking and diabetes have no place together. This is such a devastating disease to begin with. If you're adding a bad habit that increases not only your cardiovascular risk, but your pulmonary risk, multiple different cancer risks, it's really playing Russian roulette. And probably the two things in America that are causing the most preventable premature deaths are smoking and obesity.
So smoking, obesity, diabetes together is like a synergistic trifecta of sorts?
Smoking, diabetes, and what else?
And obesity.
Well, the diabetes and obesity sort of overlap and go hand in hand. But yes, there's no question that those are the most preventable causes of premature death we now have in America.
Okay. We'll be right back with more on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Call now in Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. More in a few moments.
Are you alone? I'm Tony Dungy, and this is an uncommon moment. The first paragraph of missionary Dr. David Livingston's journal entry for January 14, 1856, reveals a spirit near the breaking point. In his 16 years of sharing the gospel across Africa, Livingston had earned the respect of the African people. But he had also suffered some 30 bouts of burning fever, untold attacks by natives, and a left arm crushed by the jaws of a lion. Livingston wrote in his journal that he felt much turmoil of spirit because of new threats to his life. Still, this dedicated, uncommon missionary continued the work for almost two more decades until his death. What gave him that courage? It wasn't his own determination. It was God's promise to him. For David Livingston, knowing he was not alone in his work made all the difference. Are you alone? Don't be. The Gospel of Matthew says, "Be sure of this, I am with you always, even to the end of the age." I'm Tony Dungy. Learn more at daretobeuncommon.org.
This radio healthcare program is being brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 4th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida, 33679-2702.
Confused about dry eye? Not getting answers as to why your eyes are so red and painful and your blurry vision that gets a little better with a good blink? Now you can learn all about dry eye, the causes, treatments, and home remedies from the number one best-selling consumer book on dry eye problems, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome by Dr. Stephen Maskin. Published by Yale University Press, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome has been selected as a 2008 Best Book of the Year by the Association of American University Presses and a 2007 Best Consumer Health Book by Library Journal. Find answers for your dry eye. Go to your bookstore and pick up a copy of Reversing Dry Eye. You'll be glad you did.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back to Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We're tackling diabetes with endocrinologist Dr. Roland LaJoy. And we're on therapy. We talked about type 1 and type 2 diabetes, we talked about symptoms, diagnosis, and we're talking about therapy now, including lifestyle changes. And we started talking about initial therapy with oral agents after initiating lifestyle changes. And Roland, at what point do you consider moving on from oral therapy to insulin therapy in your diabetic patients?
I think the movement is on currently to be significantly more aggressive about how we use insulin in the past. What we've seen historically is people would go on a certain type of diabetic pill, the dose would be raised, and there was a lot of wishful thinking about lifestyle modification that wasn't happening, and glucose levels were left elevated for a long period of time. Our current approach is to suggest, yes, lifestyle modification, diet, exercise is preferred approach, plus or minus an oral medication. If a single medication doesn't work, there's no reason to drag one's feet and wait for month after month after month. One would add either insulin at that point or add a second oral agent or a third oral agent. Now, we have a limitation there because we don't have medications that work by a lot of different mechanisms yet. So typically, our current approach is to potentially go to two or three oral medications as a maximum. And then if that doesn't suffice in getting the glucose levels and hemoglobin A1C to the goal we dictated earlier, 7 or less, then we should go to insulin. And it shouldn't take a long time to figure that out.
Let me cut in right now.
Yes.
On the line is Philip. Philip from Tampa, you have a question about type 2 diabetes.
Yes. My wife, she's having a hard time controlling her type 2 diabetes. The doctors, they had her on metformin and glipizide.
Yes.
And due to the lack of blood sugar control, She gave her some samples of Actos, which I've read some nasty things about as far as complicating the cardiovascular disease aspect, and Janumet. She's I know one of the side effects she's really experiencing is the diarrhea and such. So I was wondering, is the metformin and glipizide, is that just as effective? What would you recommend in her situation?
Now, is she on Janumet along with metformin glipizide?
No. In place of the metformin, the doctor gave her Janumet, and in place of the glipizide, she gave her Actos.
Okay. Janumet has metformin in it.
Okay.
It's Januvia with metformin, so she's on three drugs. Now, that's a pretty expensive regimen.
Yeah.
Metformin will cause diarrhea. That is the main side effect. Actos.
Okay on the metformin. She takes two after her first meal.
And, okay. The bottom line is, what are her sugars doing? If she's not well controlled, she would be a great insulin candidate at this point, because if you have those three medications on board and her glucose levels are not controlled, it's time to go to insulin.
She's taking two of them. She was taking Janumet and Actos, but on her next appointment, she's going to be she's going to ask if she can just go back to the metformin and glipizide.
Well, was she in good control in that combination? That's the bottom
metformin
line.
Metformin and glipizide?
Yeah.
No, but she wasn't taking her medication like she should have.
Well, that's the debate we're having. If she's not on good control on either of those combinations, she needs to go to insulin therapy. That's the point I was making earlier. There's no sense dragging one's feet hoping for the best. You make the next step.
I see.
So, Roland, sometimes patients that may have a problem with compliance with medication, is it easier to go to insulin and safer?
Well, it's not necessarily easier or safer, but at least we know we can find an appropriate dose and often the correct insulin to get their sugars normal. What happens with diabetes over time is that it gets worse. The beta cells that we have in our body decline linearly over time. And when people have diabetes, they're already down to 50% of normal levels. By the time they're down to 20%, the oral medications will no longer work. So the typical person will go 8 to 10, 12 years and then have to go to insulin because they're not producing enough insulin. And the pills we give them have to have insulin to work. They do not lower sugar directly. They do it via insulin.
Philip, how many years has your wife had diabetes?
She's had it for a couple years now.
Just 2 years?
Yeah, 2 to 3 years.
Well, it could be an issue of compliance or it could be an issue of lifestyle. But nevertheless, you have to make sure that if you're on a combination, you're getting appropriate results. And if not, you move on and try to find something that the individual tolerates.
Are there any, supplements in addition to the prescription medicine she could take that would help?
No, there are no nutritional supplements that are yet approved by ADA, the American College of Endocrinology. There's been some issues, basically different nutritional vitamin issues, and none of them have been proven to work.
How much? Now, you recommend exercise 150 minutes per week. Would that be just cardiovascular, like treadmill walking, walking outside?
No, I recommend a mix of both aerobic. Walking's fine, but remember, the tissues that use up your glucose are muscles. So
30 seconds.
So you would recommend weightlifting?
Some. Yes.
Okay. And Philip, I'm sorry, we're running out of time. Feel free to we'll have Dr. LaJoy back in the future for more on diabetes as well.
Yes, could you give his phone number?
Last name is spelled L-A-J-O-I-E. He's in St. Petersburg, Florida.
I can give you my office number. 727-328-9661.
All right. And we thank Dr. LaJoy for joining us on the Focus on Females Radio Health Care Clinic. Tune in next week when the topic will be seizures and epilepsy with Dr. William Tatum. See you next week.